we wrap up with the Makos. But what I think we find interesting is that some of the Makos, I think, are noteworthy. The Makos of Arba is somewhat unique, I think. If you look at the Makos and the way the Torah describes the Makos, again, you have to remember, this is already after a bunch of other Makos that the Mitzrayim were afflicted by. Also, we had Tzvardeh already. Tzvardeh, we had these frogs jumping and getting into your head and into your stomach and into your lives. Then we come to the Makos of Arba. The way the Torah describes it is what's the role? The chiso es ein haaretz v'yuchal l'rois es haaretz. It will cover the ground. You will not be able to see the ground. So the question is, how does Arba really differ than Tzvardeh? Annoying bugs, annoying creatures. It seems like a little bit of a repetitive makkah. Tzvardeh was annoying frogs, and now we have annoying grasshoppers. What is the big distinction of this makkah? So I think that's exactly what the Torah is telling us. V'chiso es ein haaretz. Nowhere does the pasuk say that the arba are going to get into your ovens and into your houses. That wasn't the role of the arba. The role of the arba was to create a covering over the land. Why is that? So psychologically, people like to see the ground that they walk on. It's an interesting idea. People don't like to be covered over. They like to see what they're walking on. When you feel like you're walking on top of something else, psychologically you feel very unsettled. You feel like you don't have a good footing, so to say, in where you are. So the entire purpose of arba was really just to mess with them psychologically, to the point where they feel like they can't handle this idea of not being able to see the ground. Psychologists say this is true by snow. People that have snow on the ground all year long also have a little bit of this issue with lo yuchal l'rois, they can't see the ground. It bothers them that they don't feel like they're walking on a flat surface. And I believe that's part of the makkah of arba. It wasn't that the frogs should be annoying, the arba should be annoying like the frogs. The Torah never says anything about the arba will get into your food and get into your ovens and get into... That wasn't the purpose of it. Maybe it did. But the way the Torah describes the umph of the makkah, it's v'chiso esein aretz v'lo yuchal l'rois es aretz. You won't see the ground. Then the pasuk continues, v'achalas yeser ha'pleitan esher lechem min habar. Whatever survived barad, now was gone. What's that significance? That's another psychological feeling. You start to think, okay, we'll rebuild after barad. We got hit, but we will build, right? People always talk about rebuilding, we'll start again. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu hits him with the makkah saying, there's no rebuilding taking place over here. Whatever survived is now destroyed again. That's another psychological knockdown in the Mitzrayim's eyes. And therefore, the makkah of Arba is a very, in my opinion, a very psychological experience. It was that not only can't they see the ground, which messes with their mind, even if they're going to try to rebuild, so to say, because it's not so fast. Whatever survived this, I'm going to destroy it now. So you have very little room for rebuilding, and that definitely can emotionally affect the person in a very negative way. And then we come to the Makkah of Choshech. And we find by the Makkah of Choshech where Rashi all of a sudden has a kasha. Choshech was the ninth Makkah. Rashi asks, why did Choshech happen? Where was Rashi the first eight makas? The first eight makas, Rashi never asked, why was it dam? Why was it tzvadeh? And the truth is, the Midrashim asked. The Midrashim have tons and tons of Midrashim about why each makah had a reason and a place. The Midrashim talk about it, the Kaliyaka has a piece on it. But Rashi's interesting. Not till Choshech does Rashi ask the question, why did Choshech come? So I saw a beautiful pshat, because Choshech was the one makah that was keneged ha-teva. You can argue they were all a little keneged ha-teva, but we know, because Baruch Hu said there's going to be Or and Choshech. That's why he set up the world. Choshech came along and changed that whole premise. Choshech now meant that you're going to have darkness when there's supposed to be light. That's against the Bria Sa'ilam. So Rashi has a kasha. Why would Hashem go out and go keneged the Bria? Now you can argue that Dam, Tzvadeya, while these things are not necessarily keneged the Bria, these are things that are abnormal. They're not a steer to the way Hashem set up the world. But when you come to Choshech, you say yourself, what do you mean? Hashem said clearly that there's going to be Yoim and Laila, the two should never cross, they each have their own time. So that's why Rashi came with a kasha, and Rashi wanted to know, why was it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed the Teva? The Medrash says a beautiful pshat. Why exactly was there Choshech? Listen to the unbelievable Medrash. The Medrash says that Mitzrayim, if they wanted to have a nice candle-lit dinner, so what they do is they'd bring in a Jew, they'd stick a candle on his head, and he'd sit there during their meal, and he'd be the lights for them. That's what the Medrash says. So therefore, says the Medrash, that's the Midah connected to the Midah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays them back. You're trying to use us to create light. We're going to make it total darkness. As I said, the Medrash. But we all know of the Rashi. But Rashi says slightly, quite a different understanding. Rashi says, why was there darkness, says Rashi? And we quoted this last year. It's worth mentioning again. Says Rashi, why? Because of the Rishayim Shabbai Sahador. Who were these Rishayim, says Rashi? They didn't want to leave Mitzrayim. The tide finally turned to the Jewish people. Things have started to get better for the Jewish people. They said, why leave now? It's getting good. Let's stick around. Now is when it's nice to be living in Mitzrayim. Says Rashi, they were Rishoyim. and they died during the 3 days, Kadesh the Yiru Mitzvim and Apelosim, so the Mitzvim shouldn't see them dying. The Mashiach brings another pshat, that they should be able to know what the Goyim have in order to borrow. So I'm always bothered by this Rashi. What's Rishoyim? It's a strong term, Rishoyim. We don't use that type of wording so quickly with people. We don't call people Rishoyim. So you want to tell me they lacked a little bit of emunah, they weren't so Jewish. What's Rishoyim? So Rashi is telling us that the Jewish people have been told since they were created that we are not staying in Mitzrayim. This is not our ultimate resting place. Mitzrayim is a holding place. We're supposed to be going to somewhere bigger. We're going to go get out of here. We're going to get a Torah. We're going to go to Eretz Yisrael. That was the master plan. And they were told that. They knew that. So when these fellows say, you know what, I don't want that. This is so much nicer. Mitzrayim is working for us. Now that, of course, now that we're not Avodim, it's even better for us to stay here. Zog Rashi, you're Rishayim. Because you don't have the real picture of Klal Yisrael's future. The real picture of Klal Yisrael's future does not end with us living in Mitzrayim and becoming part of Egyptian society. It requires us to go out of Mitzrayim, get the Torah, and become Am HaNivcha. Therefore, says Rashi, the Taka Rishayim. They don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan. They have a very different future of what they want for the outcome of Klal Yisrael. And this is a problem that we fall into today. I always say, if I lived in Mitzrayim, I'd probably be part of the Rishayim group. You know, finally things start to turn in our direction. You say, so why do I need to go outside? It's great here. Let us live as Egyptian culture. We will be equals maybe. Maybe we'll even dominate them, whatever it may be. Who needs to leave? Who needs to rock the boat? And that, Rashi's telling us that we have to realize that there's a much bigger picture here. This is not about our small, you know, in our eyes, if this is our freedom. And therefore it's something much greater and such much larger. The Klausenberger Rebbe, when he was liberated by the Russians in 1945, after suffering terribly during the Holocaust, losing his entire family, and the Russians liberated him, he started to cry. So someone said, Rebbe, why are you crying? This is, you know, the happiest day of your life. He said, because I was convinced I was going to be set free by Melech HaMashiach. Now that it's the Russians, it just means it's another stop in the long trip until we finally get to the ultimate Gula. He knew that this wasn't it. To be liberated by the Russians, although it sounds great, and it's a big Yeshua, that's not the end. If it's not going to be Mashiach who's doing it, it just means we're going to go another place. Therefore, says Rashi, those people who don't understand that, they're deemed Rishoy. Pasuk tells us that during Makkas Becheres, the Jewish people were not allowed to leave their homes. So if Salvechik says a very, very insightful pshat. He says, why is it? He says, because look at other cultures and societies. When those that are oppressed have freedom, you know what happens? They attack, they kill, they take revenge. He says that's what happened in South Africa. That's the way Rav Shechter quotes from Salvechik. In South Africa, when they finally got the freedom, they took revenge. They go around killing people in the streets. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm not going to even tempt the Jewish people with such an option. Whether they would or wouldn't, I don't know. But to put them in that situation, we're not going to do it. Therefore, we're going to keep them locked inside their homes. It does not allow them any temptation to want revolt against their Mitzrayim, who oppressed them terribly for many, many years. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, don't leave. Stay in your house. This way you won't have to run into that nesoyon of wanting to take revenge of those who caused you much suffering. I don't have a good answer to this kasha. It's something that just hit me this year. Makkas Becheres somehow shook a parah. The question is, why did Makkas Becheres shake a parah? Because someone died. I can't say for sure, but statistically speaking, I would have assumed over the 9 Makkas, someone died also.
He was a Becheres himself.
That's true. So that means he would have died. But the idea of death, but the problem is when he wakes up in the morning, when he wakes up in the middle of the night, which we'll talk about in a second, he was still alive. You know, I think the pshat is that there's one thing called leading to death, and there's death directly. Pari says to himself, well, yeah, I know, people died because they were thirsty and people died because the frogs got into their heads. That's an indirect death. But when there's something called a direct death where a person just drops dead in the middle, that shook a pari. Of course people died during the other 9 Makkas. And he probably lost very close people and maybe family and advisors or whatever it is. But that you can always be miyashiv. You can touch up and say, well, it's not direct, this and the other. When healthy people drop dead, I think that's already a whole new level of feeling that there's something else over here that's controlling things. And Rashi says, by Makkas Becheres, the Pasuk says, by Yochum Para Mimi Tosai. Says Rashi, what does it mean by Yochum Para? Para got it from his bed. Yeah, I figured that's what the Pasuk meant. Rashi writes, by Yochum Para from his bed, as opposed to from where? So the Kotzke Rebbe said, it's Mamash Apella. How could Para go to sleep that night? How could he go to sleep? If you were watching what took place, and Moshe Rabbeinu was 9 for 9, every Makkah was so far right, how could you even think about going to sleep? You want to tell me, you think Moshe Rabbeinu is a scam, but to be able to go into bed knowing that there's a chance you won't wake up, how can you do it? So that's what the Torah is telling us. The Torah is telling us that no, Parai Vayoka, he went to bed. Parai Mamish was gung-ho convinced that he was right. How? So Rabbi Frank quotes from Rabbi Eliyahu Meir Bloch. He says, because we think of Parai as an evil dictator. You know, Stalin, Hitler, a Mussolini. We think of him as an evil dictator. It was more than that. Pari Mamish believed himself to be a god. He held himself equal or greater than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu has been 9 for 9 didn't shake him at all. It's an unbelievable idea. He wasn't scared, so to say, by the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu has been right, because he Mamish held himself to be an Avodah Zarah, just like he was a god. Just like he held Hashem as a god, he held he's a god. He's a Bar Plukta. He can argue on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he can disagree with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he wasn't really as nervous as one would have assumed. Now, from an historical point of view, I believe some of the other dictators that we mentioned, they also think that they're gods. Or at least they demand of others to treat them like gods. If you do a little research on my favorite topic, which is, you know, the mid-1930s till 1945 in Germany, it was very clear that people viewed Hitler and possibly vice versa as somewhat of a god. In North Korea, they view it like that. In North Korea, the North Koreans view him as a god. So there is such a concept like that even amongst dictators today, that there is an element of godliness in these dictators. Whether the people really believe it or they believe it out of fear, I'm not sure. Or whether the leaders themselves really believe it, I'm not sure. I think it might depend on the dictator. But that's the way he understands.
But the Pesukim indicate that there were times when Paro was convinced that Moshe was correct. In fact, in the beginning of this
Parsha's boy, everyone has.
We have the statement from Hashem basically saying, you know, I'm. This is what I'm going to do with them. Go do all the stuff because the famous
discussion of Parshas Bo, which I didn't talk about because it's a bigger discussion, is how do you understand the idea of Kved Alev? Because Baruch Hu made his hard heart. So where's Bechira, the famous Ramban, and others discuss it. It's quite a large discussion. I just want to quote a word that Rav Palm said over in 1984, and it's still so relevant in 2017 or 2018. Okay, good. Okay. He said the following word. It says Rav Palm, he wants to know, why was it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to have Yetzias Mitzrayim take place against Pharaoh's will? Why couldn't Yetzias Mitzrayim work where Pharaoh was brought down to his knees? And he finally agreed. He said, go. You have my blessing. I'm going to free the Jewish people, make a massive emancipation proclamation, free the Jewish people. Why couldn't it have gone down like that? He points out that that's the way it happened after Chorban Bayis Rishon. When we came back after the destruction of the first Bayis, that was what happened. The king opened his arms to us. And he helped us rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. So why couldn't Pari do that? So Rav Palm quotes from Rav Shlomo Kluger, he said, because if that were to happen, then we would forever be indebted to Pari. We'd be indebted to Pari. Pari freed us. He's the greatest human rights leader, Pari. Amazing. He freed the Jewish people. We as a nation are very big into Hakar Satoiv. We would have to be Makar Toiv to Pari. Therefore, says Rav Shlomo Kluger, the whole idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim was that it should just be us and a Kodesh Baruch Hu experience. No one else. Anivalai Shliach, right? It's not supposed to be anyone else. The whole idea of Yetzias Mitzrayim was to build a relationship between us and a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and we are his nation. So many mitzvahs are always come back to Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why is that? Because this is where we became this unified existence of us and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. No one else. No government officials, not even a Moshe Rabbeinu. It was all us and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's why Yetzias Mitzrayim had to come out in a way where there was no one else to give any credit to except for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Said Rav Palm in 1984, he says, why is there a UN? He says, we all know the UN is useless. It does very little to help the Jewish people. He says, why is it there? It's because the Gemara says in Avodah Zarah that when Mashiach comes, all the guys are going to say, everything we did was for the Jewish people. We built bridges for the Jews and this and that. So he says, the UN's going to come and say, what we did was for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. Says Rav Palm, he says, I can't say it for sure, but without a doubt, he believes, including that Gemara, is the UN. The UN's going to say, look what we did for Israel. Look what we did for the Jewish people. We helped them. And then we're going to open up the books, and we're going to see every single time the UN voted, how did those votes look? Did any of them go in any way positive for the Jewish people, including the most recent one, about moving the capital to where it belongs? The UN was not very keen. Keep in mind, a bunch of countries that are horrible people, to their own people, they have a sheet to shine. They're a sheet not against Israel. It's an unbelievable concept. The whole UN is mamash. It's like a kid's game, the UN. It's a joke. A bunch of people sitting around the table, pointing fingers at people that are doing things that are wrong, and they themselves are doing a million times worse in their own country. But Israel, no, they're not behaving properly. So what's the whole idea, says Rav Palm? It's to show that you guys did nothing. You think we're in existence today because of the UN? Nothing. We're here despite the UN. Therefore, he writes again, this was in 1984, it's still so true today, that the whole idea of these organizations are for us to say, it's not the UN that's giving us anything we have today, it's all come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they're going to tie in that they did anything. We're going to open up all those votes and we're going to show they did nothing. Every vote that they did was against Israel. Every vote they did was against us. They were not trying to help us. And therefore, It's included in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah that the Gemara of Avodah Zarah said when Mashiach comes, all their from a cheshbainus that they tried to help us will ultimately be rejected, as we know they're not looking out for Klal Yisrael's best interest. Okay, we're holding over here in the Gemara. Daria Ya'el Bat Yafa Yo'alet. Okay.
That's
for
David's daughter.
Today's is going to be for Refuah Shalema for Daria Ya'el Bat Yafa Yo'alet, who needs a Refuah Shalema Bekarev. Okay. Again, we always say that when learning Torah is important, but it's even more so when other people are not learning Torah. Today is one of those days where I think a lot of yeshivas are closed, and there's a lot less Liman HaTorah. So Baruch Hashem, we have the chance to learn Torah and be Mechazik Torah, and Mir Hashem, that should all be Azchos for Refuah Shalem. We're holding over here in the Gemara, where the Gemara is trying to understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah says if you throw a get closer to the Isha, she's divorced, closer to the man, she's not divorced. So we so far had two pshatim in the Gemara. What do these words mean? Rav says close to means four amis. Rabbi Yochanan says close to means who the one who can control the get, to guard the get. Just read the Gemara one more time. Says the Gemara, Hey Chidami Mechz, the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Makarv lo shenino afilu mea amo. Rabbi Yochanan says it's not about the numbers, it's close to you can even be within 100 amis. How do you have a 50-50? Because again, the Mishnah talked about closer to him, closer to her, then the Mishnah called Mechza al Mechza, which translates to be half and half. To which again, according to Rav, half and half meant you had two groups of Edim, each group saying a different version of the story. That was Mechza al Mechza. So Amar Rav, Simon bar Abba, Ledimi Farshad, Midi Rabbi Yochanan, I'm going to take it upon me to explain to Rabbi Yochanan, who Yochel Shomroi, if he's able to guard the get, he ain't a yechid l'shamer, and she cannot guard the get, which means he's the complete sole controller of the get, no matter where the get is, no matter how many. It's not a distance issue; it's a control issue. Says the Gemara, Zehu Karev Lo, that's closer to him, and she would not be divorced. He yechid l'shamer, v'hu ain't a yechid l'shamer. She is the sole guarder, protector of the get, and he is not involved at all. Zehu Karev Lo, she would be divorced. Shneiem yechid l'shamer. Let's say they both equally have power and control over the get, or shneim ein yechalim, or they both, neither of them have power over the get, zehu mechza al mechza, that would be deemed the case of half and half, to which the halacha is safek gerush. So this is the way the Gemara explains Rabbi Yochanan. So we talked a lot in the last couple of weeks of how to understand Rabbi Yochanan in simple lumdus, what type of kinyan is they're called protecting. So we mentioned either it's working with the Rabbanon, or it's working with an lumdus of how gerushin works. We discussed that at length. What I want to discuss today, including in Gong Weiter, is the last line of the Gemara. The Gemara said, how do you have a case of mechza al mechza, 50-50? So according to this pshat, it's dependent upon who can guard it. So what's 50-50, the Gemara says? If they both can watch it, or neither of them can watch it. So Tosfos right away is bothered with a very basic kasha. Tosfos says, shneim ein yecholim zel mechza al mechza, pirish, ein yecholim nesham rekoi echad levadoi. Tosfos wants to know, what does this line of the Gemara mean? That they both can't watch it. So it means no one's guarding the get. If no one's guarding the get, then there's no gerushin. Because again, the shmira is the reason for why someone is kaina, however you're going to learn it. But someone's guarding the get is the reason why they're kaina the get. So if neither of them are guarding the get, so he's not kaina, she's not kaina. That's another way of saying not a good get. How's that suffer gerushin? How do you understand the gemara? So Tei says, no, that's not what's going on over here. You have to read it like this. It doesn't mean that no one's watching it. It means that no one can watch it completely on their own. Due to the dynamics of the situation, each person needs a little bit of help from the other to get the get in its status of watched. Then, says the Gemara, that's a case of Megureshes v'Ein Megureshes. They're both watching it together. Let's say, for example, the way the get is situated, the angle requires that she can only watch a part of it, or she needs him to help. Then it's going to be called a Megureshes v'Ein Megureshes. That's the Rashba's kash. We'll see that in a minute. Says Taisis Avalim Ein Yichoyim L'Shomer Klau. But if you read the Gemara Kipshutoi, that no one's able to watch it, says Taisis Pshita, the Ein Megureshes Klau Kolikar. Of course, it's not going to be a divorce. Why? Because again, the whole kinyan in this sugya is based on the Yachol L'Shomer. However you're going to configure it, but that's the premise of the kinyan. So if no one's able to shomer, that means no one's kainet. No one's kainet. You don't have a get. So therefore, Tosfos learns what we're talking about over here is a case where they're both unable to watch it independently. They need to watch it together.
And this is simultaneous between seeing that has to happen, that ability to watch the get has to happen.
I'm not sure when exactly it has to start, because at some point there was a Nesina, and the question is, where was the Nesina made? So, assuming the Nesina was made to an area where right away they were both able to watch it. If it only happened later, I would assume it's not a good Nesina. That's what I would venture to believe. Now, the Me'iri over here has a different shot. The Me'iri thinks there's another way to learn our Gemara. If you look over here in the Me'iri, right under the Gemara, I changed the numbers a couple of times. I don't even know which number I'm up to now. I think it's that says 3, the Me'iri. Says the Me'iri like this. The Rashba, thank you. The Rashba has a kasha on Tosfos. And the Rashba, many Rishonim have this kasha, which we need to talk about at length today, is why isn't it a problem called Agud Gabe? We learned many times in this perek that the husband's involved in the get, it ruins everything. He can't be involved. So therefore, Frek, the Rashba, and other Rishonim, what happened over here? The area is protected from a combo, me, the lady, and the man. Frek the Rashba, that means the only way this Rishus became hers was with the husband's help. Right. So if the husband's help is what makes it what it is, that should be a problem if the husband's involved. Agud Gabe, he's connected to the divorce. He can't be connected. So how does it work? That's the Rashba's kasha on Tosfos, which we'll deal with in a few minutes. Because of this kasha, the Me'iri comes up with a whole new pshat in the Gemara. What does he say, the Me'iri? He quotes his kasha, V'yesh l'tmua, me'achar shein hi yichoy l'shamroi, if she can't guard it on her own, eichi mugureshes. How can she even be suffering erishin? There's nothing to talk about. So he quotes Tosfos, u'pishu b'Tosfos, shnei me'in yichom l'shamroi kol echad levad, ha'shneim ke'echad yichoyim l'shamroi. Ve'eini me'even, I don't understand, says the Me'iri. She'avzu achar shado v'toli b'shmira, agid gabehu. The husband's connected. V'yesh mefarshim, says the Me'iri, I have a new way of learning the Gemara. Not like Tosfos. How else can I learn the Gemara? The Yesh Mefarshim Oisei B'shi B'seich Arba Amashallah Ela She'ena Yechayla L'Shamrei. Says Me'iri, I'm going to make it a kimta in the Gemara. The Gemara is talking about a case where Shitaka can't watch it. He can't watch it and she can't watch it. But instead of the get being 57 Amas away from her, the get's within her Dalet Amas. Now, we spoke about this earlier, that this is a very big machlokes. Does Rabbi Yochanan disagree with the premise of Dalet Amos or not? Does Rabbi Yochanan reject this whole thing called Dalet Amos and he only has who's able to guard it or not? So the Me'iri is suggesting that the case of the Gemara is, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we're talking about a case where the get's within her Dalet Amos, he can't watch it and she can't watch it. But because it's in her Dalet Amos, that now makes things better. Because Dalet Amos Pashtus doesn't need any ability to watch it. Now, we did mention, thank you, we did mention that's a machlokes Rishonim. What does Rabbi Yochanan hold about within the Dalet Amos? Does Rabbi Yochanan hold Dalet Amos works automatically, or does he hold Dalet Amos also needs Shmira? Tosfos L'shitos could not answer this Me'iri, because Tosfos disagrees with this premise. Tosfos thinks that Rabbi Yochanan holds that if it's within the Dalet Amos, I don't need Shmira. So obviously this doesn't work, Tosfos L'shitos. The only problem you have to ask yourself with the Me'iri's pshat is, so why is it a Suffolk Erishin? It's so beautiful, but why is it a Suffolk? If it's within her Dalet Amos and she's not able to watch it, so great. So it should be a Vaday. So you're going to have to learn that the Me'iri held that's the goof of the Suffolk. The Gemara wasn't sure what Rabbi Yochanan held about Dalet Amos. Does Rabbi Yochanan hold Dalet Amos works without Shmira, or does Dalet Amos work only together with Shmira? So in a case where it's within her Dalet Amos and there's no Shmira, that's why the Gemara was Musab. According to Tosfos, how do you learn the Gemara's Mechtzal Mechtze? Tosfos learns Mechtzal Mechtze means they're both watching it together. So, first of all, how does that fit into the words mechtza al mechtza? We had this problem earlier in the sugya. How to fit everything back into the words? Rasha asked this on Tosfos. What does mechtza al mechtza means? Half by half. How does this make sense, half by half? So by Tosfos, you're going to have to say what it means is that since they're both doing it together, and each one of their control is a siba to give you bailus, so it's mamsh, half and half. He's watching half of it, and she's watching half of it. Together, it's fully watched. So each one has a siba for why they should be the owner. So it's mamish like half and half. It's a half and half relationship. I want to come back to that today, hopefully, also. Yeah, we're going to get to that at some point. That issue of overlapping Dalet Amos, is that the same as our case? We have to talk about that stuff.
Does it make a difference if they're on two different sides, if they're watching it together?
Meaning,
it like jointly and severally, that each one's individually responsible or collectively? It's got to be watched because he wants her to get divorced. She doesn't.
So we're going to talk about that in a few minutes also. But in the Metzius over here, it's because each one can't do it on their own. Again, I'm not sure for the dynamics of why it is that way, but each one solely can't guard the get. It's only guarded because the two of us are working together. Mm-hmm. So the question is, so then why is that a suffigation? The reason why it's a suffigation is because each one of us are experiencing a Siba for our own kinyan. If I'm guarding it, that's the reason why I'm the Bailam. If you're guarding it, it's the reason why you're the Bailam. Now that we come together, so right. We're shtickle like both Bailam. So whenever you're both Baalim, it becomes Safek Gerushin. We'll talk more Bli Nedar about how that works. So the Me'iri is Pshat in the Gemara, maybe fits better into the words. According to the Me'iri, Shneim Ein Yechayla means they both can't watch it. This is an unguarded get. If it's an unguarded get, Taisus says Kasha, says Me'iri, yeah, but it's within her Dalanamis, which opens us up to a Machlokes Rishonim, which we spoke about a few weeks ago.
But how would this dispute ever come up? Meaning, if you want to join them together, yeah, that means she needs to be willing to say, I see half, he needs to say, I see half. Together, they see the whole document.
Correct. Or protect it more.
What?
Protect the document.
Protect the document. So, in those situations, neither one of them would be looking to buttle the get to begin. Meaning, you're using both of their consciousness to make
right.
it work.
Right.
Well, if you're doing that, why would there ever be a? How would it ever become an issue that somebody would be challenging the guest?
No, the question is, was this considered the Bezdin that was watching this? The question was, does this count as an Asinus HaGet?
I know, but how would it ever arise? Because they're both, in essence, in unison, agreeing that there's a good get.
They can agree all they want, but if it doesn't fit the some pre-existing rule, it's not going to work. And there's no pre-existing rule that dictates that this is a Kenyan. This whole Kenyan of Rabbi Yochanan called Yochol L'Shamrei is defined by soul control or protection. Here, when it's joint, how does that work? Which we'll see in a second. Just for the purpose of Chazara, we had three cases in the last Gemara of joint relationships between the husband and the wife. We had a case in the Gemara where the husband and wife share one Amma, which means that it's Dalet Amas and they share one of the Amas. That was one case. We had another case in the Gemara where there was four Amas of his, four Amas of hers, and the get was overlapping. Half of the get was in his rishos, and half of the get was in her rishos. Those were two different cases in the Gemara. If you remember when we learned the Gemara, the first case of the Gemara was where they shared one of the Amas. So the Gemara rejected that pshat. Then the Gemara had another pshat. Maybe it's he's in her four Amas. She's in his four Amas, in her four Amas, but the get overlaps. The Gemara says, no! All good gabe. Can't work. The get's in his rishos. So all the rishonim had a kasha. And in the first case of the Gemara where they share an amma, you don't have a problem? When the husband and wife share an amma together, and it gets in that amma, why doesn't that create an ogad gabe problem? We mentioned this kasha back then. So the Ran comes up with the following answer. And by doing so, he answers up the kasha in our Gemara also. What's the Ran's idea? The Ran says whenever the husband and wife are joining ownership in an area, the assumption is the husband is giving up his rights to the isha. Because his rights will affect the ability of the get to be chal. So if it's a question of joint ownership, then right away the husband steps back and says, you know what, I'm giving it to you. The Lashon of the Ran is, he's mashal loy makim. He lends it to her. He doesn't give up ownership. It's automatic. The das ha'adom is that I want to create chalos gerushin. If my ownership is a shter, no problem. I'll give up my ownership temporarily and you'll be able to do it. So therefore, says the Ran, that's the answer to the original kasha. The first case of the Gemara where they joined, they owned one amma together. So then the husband steps back and says, you know what, you can have my abaylas in this one amma. But when the husband has his own four ammas and she has her own four ammas, he's not just giving up his four ammas. That's not a joint ownership. That's a complete independent ownership. That I'm not willing to give up. So if I'm not giving that up, so then it's a kasha of ogad gabe. That's the Ran's answer. Says the Ran, let's bring it back to our Gemara. Says the Ran over here, number top left corner, Veli Nira. He's coming to address the Rajba's kasha. That if you learn like Taisvis, that the area is guarded by both of them, why isn't it a kasha of ogad gabe? Says the Ran Veli Nira. The chiparchina of ogad gabe hainu dafka beget yoitze midal ramas shalol adal ramas shalol. That's only in the case where he has his amis, she has or four amis, and they're independent owners. But she mitzvahs get b'toich shalol legamri. But you have a situation where part of the get is in his rishos and not at all in my rishos, and part of the get's in my rishos and not in his rishos. Avol kan kiven shashmira oise. Rishus, that's an important word to put in parentheses. But over here, since each one is guarding the get, that itself is the reason why each one is a little bit owner of the area. Umakim zeh ben shneim. So it's a dual ownership. They both own the area of where the get is. Mistama bal mashalo makim. You can assume that the husband would give up his little ownership that he has to her. Kiven she'enu miyuchad lo, it's not designated to him. That's how you understand the Gemara of Merzal Merzal. So what's the Ran's answer to our kasha? The Ran's answer is that since the ownership over here is in a dual fashion, it's because you're guarding it that makes you a little owner. I'm guarding it that makes me a little owner. So we're both owners. We're partners, so to say, shutfim. Therefore, whenever that comes up, says the Ran, right away the husband gives up his rights. He's mashal his chelik to her. Therefore, says the Ran, if he's mashal his chelik to her, It's not Oged Gabe anymore. He's not connected anymore. Therefore, it's not a problem. So learns the Ran to answer up the Rajba's kasha.
Oged Gabe means that if he maintains any sort of control ownership, it's invalid.
Correct. Now, we'll have to talk much more about Oged Gabe in other scenarios, but at least in our Gemara, it's the assumption is that the get is in a place that's controlled by the husband. Now, the Ran is so geschmack that you have to ask yourself the question, so why is it only Suffolk Gershon? Yeah, this is all explaining the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Mechza, Mechza, Migureshes, Ve'enu Migureshes. Which the way the Ran learns Taisus is talking about this case, where they're both controlling it together. And you tell me that now, to get around Oged Gabe, the husband gives over the area. So why is it Suffolk? It's Vaday. Right. Nothing to talk about.
We're only assuming he gives it
up. Ah, so the way the Acharonim answers, because we don't know. We don't know. Even though the Ran sets it up with, you know, he writes, Mistama, right? Right? So therefore, the Acharonim say that according to the Ran, you're going to have to say, it's not a Vadois. We don't know for sure. We didn't get into his brain. We assume that most normal husbands would do this. Maybe he's not a normal husband. Maybe he's an abnormal fellow. Therefore, says the Acharonim, that's how the Ran learned the suffix of the Gemara.
In our case, this Shmira and Rishus.
Oh, okay. That's what I want to get to right now.
So let's think
about our Gemara differently than the first Gemara that we learned about. The first Gemara that we learned about was talking about Dalai Lamas. Dalai Lamas is a real meaningful Rishus. It's my area. So whoever comes to the Dalai Lamas has Dalai Lamas. So when me and the Isha share Dalai Lamas, so it means I have an Amma that's mine. We share the same Amma. I have Bailas in that Amma. I then relinquish my Bailas to her. But what does it mean over here by Kuf Amma? We're talking about over here, that it's 96 Ammas away from the get, but the husband's able to guard it. You're going to tell me now that the husband has Bailas in the Mokim where the get's Kainan? He owns it? He doesn't own anything. There's no ownership over here. There's a din. If you're able to guard the get, the halach is your migureshes. And you're going to tell me you're able to give... How do you give that up exactly? How do you transfer that? How are you mashallah? How do you lend that out to someone else? You can only lend whatever you have. Whatever you own, you can lend out. You don't own 96 amas away from an object. How does this work? To be mashallah makkah, you have to own it first.
And why is that? In which scenario is that?
In kuf amma, an argument with 100 amas. It gets 96 amas away from you. You're going to tell me now that there's a din? That's what the Ran says, that he's mashalit. So by Dalai Lamas, I can understand it. I have a Dalai Lamas. I have one of the four Amas. So I can be mashal you whatever I own. But what do I own over here in 96 Amas? So I found later, Reb Shlaiman Taka asked this kasha. In number 3b, he writes, he says, Derut shel Ran Sarachim, De'ech reshus hazed demokim shiach l'shom eshayach ba'ash elu bakno. How can you say, because I can guard the area, and therefore that makes me an owner in the area, and therefore I can give it over to someone else? How exactly do you transfer the? How do I make you? How do I lend out the area to you? Again, the area is not really an ownership area because there's no such thing called 96 amos. It's the pshat because if I can guard it, so the Torah says it's enough to call my rishus. But how exactly do I give that away to someone else?
So why can't we say like we said before that the kuf amos is an extension of the daud amos, the same way you do the daud.
So the problem with that is that we know there's no pre-existing concept called kuf amos anywhere. It's only dollars that we have by Aveda, by Metziah,
by other things. But however, but you're right. But at the end of the day, whatever the Gemara thought for the Kofama, whatever, same way
the problem that I have with all this, and no one discussed this, is that why don't we just say that all these things were done for the Isha's benefit, and the husband has absolutely zero rights? Again, Dalai Lamas was a takana for the Isha. So Dalai Lamas is for her, not for him. So automatically, he's out of the picture. Kofama was for her, not for him. So he's automatically out of the picture.
That's not true, because once they gave...
So that's the Ran Lashitasoi. It's Mamish, the Ran himself writes earlier in the Perek that we don't do that. He writes that once we open up the floodgates of Dalai Lamas, it's got to go both ways. The Pashas would be not like that. The Pashas would be they gave it to whoever they needed to give it to. They didn't give it to me and you. If I want to make a business deal in Dalai Lamas, in Rosh Hashanah, I can't. Because they were only misakin in Sidi Rosh Hashanah. Why does it work for a get? The Karnat Sagunas. So the Karnat Sagunas wouldn't help for Mecca Chomemka.
But if you could have a concept of giving up ownership,
you're not giving up the Shemira.
You're
losing your bailus. It's not called to be mashalit.
But we're not dealing bailus in a normal way. We're saying it's only dependent on Shemira.
Right, the only reason it works is because of Shemira.
So I can't give over the Shemira. I'm not saying that now. I'm still guarding it. Right? If I'm still the sole guardian of it, I'm not being makna you my area. That's not what he's saying. It doesn't mean I'm saying now you're going to be the sole watcher. No.
I'm watching it for
maybe
you on your behalf. In other words,
I don't know.
You're like almost the shliach in this case. I'm watching it for you.
It's as if
you're watching it because I'm your guardian.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I understand well enough what it means that the Shemira is again, the idea over here is that when you're shomer in area, that's a reason why you should be viewed as an owner. So if you're... Is the pshat that you now really own that area? It's now mamish my. With the husband, let's go like this. With the husband, let's say the husband is guarding the get, and an aveda falls in. We spoke about this with Kiveg and others. Would he be able to be kain an aveda and kufama? So we were told that I'm a chaykh shem. Kiveg and others passed. It's not because what does aveda have to do with this? This is not aveda type sugya. Again, according to the way some achrayim learned, maybe, but passed is not.
So wouldn't the argument be that you raised the question? How do you know what's in 96 amma? You know, there's no way you could know what's in there. But if I can see it, if within the 96 there's a portion that I can see that I'm guarding.
Right.
So in that instance, well, you would be right. Normally, once I'm able to see it, that area within the 96, I control, and therefore that I can give. I may not be able to give.
No, but
things that I don't see within the 90s.
The argument made is, how do you give an area they don't really own? When you talk about giving over, a lending, a mashal.
I'm controlling it by shmira.
But does shmira make me an owner of this area? That's the argument. Is shmira a reason why you own things or not?
Well, if I'm responsible, right?
Again, if the same scenario with an aveda would never fly. If I'm standing in the middle of a shisram and I'm guarding the entire area, I got the yellow tape and everything, and an aveda falls from shemayim, I'm not carrying that aveda.
So who gave me the right to who am I shomer to? Who am I watching it?
I'm watching the get versus the outside world, a dog or whatever it is. But the question is, why is this a reason for creating a divorce? Is that real ownership? Because I can guard an area, now the area becomes mine. Legally, that never flies, right?
Well, I have a control over the I don't have a control over the owner. I have a control over the stranger. Meaning, if I am given the responsibility to see something,
correct,
then my rights may be inferior to the person who's owned it, but my rights are superior to everyone else.
But that doesn't explain why I become an owner. The fact that I can control a get doesn't mean that this get where it's sitting is my area. We know ownership is defined by, whatever, I'm not even sure anymore what ownership is defined by, but it has something to do with you own it, you control it, or something like that. I don't know. But Dalai Lama just means I can guard the get. What type of Kenyan is that?
No, but maybe here the thing is that it is his, it's the Baal's. How does it get out of his shus into har? So he still has shmir over it. It's not strong enough to take it out of his rishos. So that's what he's giving up. He's giving up the fact that he's no longer going to be shomer it, and therefore his bialis is cut.
He's not saying I'm not being shomer it anymore. He's just saying I'm going to be shomer it, which it creates my ownership, and that I own, I'm going to give away to you.
So I'm saying that. I'm no longer being
shomer.
If he gives
our guest, I don't think that's what's going on over here. That's not what the Ran says. That's not being mashal hamakim. Mashal means I own something, and I'm lending to you what I own. That wouldn't be called mashal. That would be called switching the shmir. I'm going to walk away. But the problem is, it's a metzias over here. This thing is only guarded between the two of us. You need me here, and I need you here. It's not a halachic issue. It's a metzias. Whatever the case may be, is you need to stand on that corner, and I need to stand in this corner. So together, it's guarded. So when I tell you, I'm giving you the area. What does it mean? I'm giving you what? It's not my ear to give over. The shmir creates the bialis, so then if I'm being shamed, it's mine. I can't all of a sudden gift it to you because I decided to swap it.
I'm watching it on your...
I'm not sure what that means. I don't know if that changes anything to say that you're watching it for someone else. If shmir is a seba for bialis, so then I don't know if you could do it for someone else.
Part of the bialis is shmir.
Right. So if I'm being shomer,
but I'm not.
But that's not the case. The Rav's not saying that you're saying, okay, now you watch it by yourself because she's ain't yechilah shomer. She can't guard it. She needs him.
It can only work as a
joint effort in guarding it. So all he can do is he can say, yes, I'm guarding it, but whatever bialis comes out from that guarding, I'm giving to you. Fractur Schneiman, that's not transferable. You can't give that away. We did it earlier, says the Rav. Yeah, it's because earlier we were talking about real things. Dalai Lama, you own Dalai Lama, whatever alumnus you want to use, so that you can give away. So he says he doesn't understand exactly how to learn the comment of the Rav. Yeah, I think...
Because shmir also requires responsibility, meaning I now, to everyone else, or to the owner, I have obligations. If something happens to the land, right, I'm considered like the owner. It's like a triple net lease. I'm responsible for the owner. I'm responsible for the owner.
Not in this case.
I'm in essence, I am... the owner of the property in terms of...
No. I don't think that's true. There's no such ownership called control. For some reason, Rabbi Yochanan held that by Gerushin and Kedushin, this works. Why? So you're going to either go the Rabbanan way, the easy way, or go the more lamdish way, the way Salvechik understood, is because this is considered an extension of my possession. In an area that I control and I guard, although legally is not my area, For Gerushin, that's enough that we called your earring.
The Torah didn't that's enough. Require real ownership.
Right. The Torah said, Amaisim Mesina. Right, right. That we spoke about. The Torah just required Rishusai. This is Gnuk Rishusai. Okay. So the Rajba asks this Kasha. This was the Rajba's Kasha. So let's see number four, the Rajba. Frag the Rajba. The Tzarechin, the Mikomachim Kivin Shahabal Tzarech Bishmi Rasoi, Agit Gabehu. The Rajba was the first that we mentioned earlier to have this Kasha on Taisi. What about Agit Gabe? Now you have to ask yourself, the Rajba is going to be the one to ask this Kasha. Why is that a problem for the Rajba to ask this Kasha? Because there's another Rajba, which we learned together a few weeks ago, in number six. Back on that Gemara that we learned on Ayin Ches, the Gemara again had two cases. Case number one was where they shear one Amma together of the four Ammas. The Gemara, no problems, Agid Gabe. The Gemara never asked the word Agid Gabe. Then the Gemara made another case, they each have their own four, and they get some both of their Rishas. Oh, Agid Gabe! So the Rajba himself asked about an omen earlier, number six, Frek the Rajba, V'hadulay parech hacha v'ha Agid Gabe k'te parech b'samuch. Why didn't the Gemara ask this Kasha of Agid Gabe on the first Gemara like it does on the second Gemara? Says the Rajba, Mishum. The kivin de koi kula b'soich arba amas dido. K'moi ba'arba amas didei. Because in the first case of the Gemara, they sheared the Dalai Amas, so the get was in an area that was sheared by both of them. It was, they both owned it. Says the Rajba, to have immigrations, very immigrations. I was very happy with the Gemara, says the Rajba. I had no problems. An area that's owned by both creates self
Gamishin.
That's
the Agar Gabe case, right?
That's the case where the Gemara didn't ask Agar Gabe. Avul Kamon! But in the next case of the Gemara, the Koy Mitzasi Chutzlar Ba'amas Dido, the Koy Ba'amas Diday. Then the Gemara was talking about a case where the get was completely two separate Rishosim. I have my Dalai Amas, you have your Dalai Amas, and the get is partially in yours and partially in mine. Then the Gemara throws up and says, no, Agar Gabe. So what's the Rajba's Yisoid? We spoke about this then. The Rajba understood that Agid Gabe is only a problem, not because we're joint. Agid Gabe is a problem where you're involved and I'm not involved. If part of this get is totally not in my Rishos, and it's by the husband, no good. If we're joint we can live with, says the Rajba. I'm okay with joint. Because there's never a time where the get's not in my Rishos. It's in mine and yours, I can live with it. But to be in mine and to be not in mine and in yours, that's not going to work. Or part of it.
Okay. That's in Harish.
The Agud Gabe that we're learning now is not the full Sugi Magare. It's the next Shtikl Gemar, which I'm trying to get to quicker as fast as we can.
But why is there Agud Gabe Shaila in the first case?
So the way the Rajba learned Agud Gabe, at least in our Gemara, Agud Gabe is not the fact that the husband's involved. The husband can be involved, doesn't stare the get. It's if the husband's involved and I'm not involved. Meaning, when the get's half in my rishos and half in his rishos, so the half that's in his rishos, I have no shaykhis to, and he has all of it. That's a problem.
That's suffix.
That's where the Gemara had a kasha Agud Gabe.
Right,
but in a case where it's joint, the Rajba says, I have no problem. So now I ask you, so why was the Rajba having a kasha on our Gemara? The Rajba walked in an Agamar and had Agud Gabe. What's Agud Gabe? This Gemara should be the equivalent of a joint Dalai Lamas. Because since they're both watching it, they each create a partial ownership, so they're like a partnership. If they're a partnership, the Rajba told me, enough.
The definition is she can't watch it without him.
Okay, good. Okay, good. Right. So we'll get to that. That's the answer. But let's at least build up the kasha. The kasha that I'm asking is that why is the Rajba even asking this kasha? If the Rajba remembers what he wrote on Daf Ayin Ches, he doesn't have a kasha. The Rajba set up the rules for Agud Gabe are the following. As long as it's a joint experience, it's not Agud Gabe. Our Gemara is a joint experience. He has the power to watch it. She has the power to watch it. Each one of those creates a partial ownership, so they own it together. Owning it together, the Rajba says, it's not Agud Gabe. So why is the Rajba? And he leaves off Tzorachin in our Gemara. Not only does he bring up the Kasha, he doesn't answer, look what I wrote over there. He mamish holds the Shtarka Kasha. Why is it such a big Kasha? The Rajba told us in Aman Aleph that the rules of Agud Gabe are when there's no partnership. This is partnership. So what's the Pshat? So you're going to have to say that over here it's worse. Because it's not like she has an independent right to anything. Bishlam on the Gemara by Dalai Lamas, she had her own Dalai Lamas. He had his. They each had their own Siba independently for ownership. Over here, her whole ownership is because of his help. Because without the husband, she'd have nothing. Because she can't be Shomra on her own. So because her whole rights to this is dependent upon the husband, that ruins it and makes it Agud Gabe. So you have to say in the Rajba.
All depend on Adam also. Did Adam have to see the?
Yeah, that's what we spoke about a couple weeks ago. How this works with the Adam.
So let's assume that's the case. So if you have a situation where he attempts to give her the get, and the wind blows, and so he's throwing, so it ends up half in his and half in hers.
Yep.
So the Adam come and testify
that's
that
a big
he
problem.
Saw that his intent was to give it
that's
to
a
her,
big problem.
But it, I mean, yeah. it, I'm just
that
saying,
that does present issues. Correct.
But we don't know the specific facts upon which. Upon which the Gemara or the Rishonim are talking, you can have situations where the intent may have been clear, and then you're just trying to figure out legalistically, or conversely, where the intent's not clear at all, and you're trying to figure out not
understanding
that whether or not the
that definitely could become an issue, as we spoke about. It's very important to know what the Eidim need to know, what they don't need to know. What could they find out later? It's all very relevant.
Clear up the Shmira problem.
Yeah.
The Nesina is 100%.
Yeah. The question of...
Ibn Awad's... Yeah. Not in Dalet Amos.
Right, that's the Chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan. How exactly this works. Right. Now, Reb Steinman has another piece. Reb Steinman was, of the few Achraim that I found, that really got into this sugya, dealing with all of the issues. A lot of people, I think, just like, you know, didn't spend too much time in it in the Achraim. I'm not sure why. I think there's a lot of very important lumdus over here. But Reb Steinman has a different kasha. He doesn't understand all of these Rishonim. The Rajba, Agud Gabbe. He says, what's Agud Gabbe? He brings the following mashal. And number eight, he writes, he said like this. He says he doesn't understand the whole kasha of the Rishonim. What happened over here? She's able to guard it, and he helps her be able to guard it. Says Reb Steinman, what would happen if a guy says to the lady, listen, I know you want to get divorced, so I'm going to lend you my backyard, but I'm only going to lend you my backyard for the duration of the life of your husband. Calls man, your husband's alive. Says Reb Steinman, v'hisna dehamashal rak calls man shabal chai. So taina nimtza daidei mashabal chai yesh la hachatzer. So the only reason why she has the chatzer is because the husband's alive. Because that was stipulated. V'chizeh nikur agad gabe. Says Reb Steinman, in that made up case, would anyone call that agad gabe? Because the only reason why I'm allowed to own the chatzer is because the fellow who's lending it to me stipulated that he's only lending it to me as long as the husband's alive. So the husband's life is a reason why I own the chatzer. So throw up your hands and say agad gabe. So obviously we assume that that's ridiculous. No one's going to say that. So says Reb Steinman, this is where it gets interesting. V'hachanami kanhu. He said he thinks the same thing also. Etzem ha'fsharis lishma yachad ima oisiz ele rishusak. What happens over here is the fact that she could watch it is the reason why it becomes her rishus. Now, there's a technical problem. She can't watch it independently. So the husband kind of helps her get over that obstacle. And now she's an independent bailim with the help of the husband. V'loma ze agad gabe. Why is this called Agad Gabe? Now, I would have assumed it's called Agad Gabe because you have zero without it. Meaning, without the husband, you don't have rights to this area. It's not like you have an independent bailus, like the case of you have a she'ela. You have nothing. Your whole rights to it is due to the Shmira. You don't have Shmira. You have Chatzi Shmira. So he writes, V'im ha'yekavanosam la'hakshay tekivin da'havi gamru shusoy. Maybe the pshat is not that it's a chasarn and herishas. It's that since he's watching it, and she's watching it, so it's partially both of their rishas. And then the kasha is very good, which is the way we learned it. I'm not sure what he means by this. That doesn't sound like that from the Rishonim. I don't know. When we learned the Rishonim, that's what I thought the Rishonim meant. That's Ogid Gabe is because he's watching it. His ability to watch it creates a little bit of his Rishos. So it gets a little bit in his Rishos and a little bit in her Rishos. If you say it like that, then that we mentioned in the Rajba is somewhat troubling. So Reb Steinman thought that this Gemara is not really good old-fashioned Ogid Gabe. He thought it's more doing to his case of She'ela. Not sure why one would look at it like that, but that's the way he thinks it's more mistaver to look at. There's a whole other mahalach in Rishonim and Achrayim to answer up the Rajba's kasha. What was the Rajba's kasha? The Rajba's kasha is if the husband is helping me guard the get, so then the husband's involved, it's Ogad Gabe. Says the Ritva, that's not the case. Says Ritva number 7, the Ikashalach, I might have him aggressive klal, kiven shabal tzarech b'shmir Ogad Behu. He asks the kasha of the Rajba, it's Ogad Gabe. The Yeshlema, the holy kasha. The loy mikri ogid el kishahu brishusoi the zoichel amamish. Says the mitzvah ogid gabe is when it's really in the husband's area. Oy b'soichar ba'amas the oz havi ogid gabe vareki iluhu oiches b'reish aget. He is in some form of control of the get. Avol kan kimin shiyotz chutzl brishusoi loy mikri ogid gabe. The get's not in his rishos. He's guarding it. Guarding a get doesn't make the area yours. Ulekain. Have a savig migureshes. 1 second. The Ritva is basically telling us that the way this whole kuf amma things work is not the way we've been learning till now. It's not the pshat that kuf amma makes it your rishos. It's bogus. Nothing to do. So how are you ever divorced with kuf amma? What do you mean? It's not a suffix. It's nothing. Says the Ritva, Dilidido, who did tikkun rabbanim the tiska loy ba'isa makam. Chazal made up that she has a kinyan called shmira of an area. Avoloi rishusoy shaloi hu klal. It's not his rishus. Therefore, says the Ritva, Ogid gabei is the pshat when the get is partially in my area. This get is not in the husband's area. The husband might be guarding the get. I'm not denying it. But the get is not in the husband's area because the husband has no rights. The rights that were given in this area were given strictly to a woman because of the Kodesh Agunis. Yeah.
In the case where there's a third person, a woman and another man, and they both need each other to watch
That would be good.
That would be good.
That's right. Reb Shtaim speaks to that explicitly. I forgot to mention it. He speaks to that. In Tosfos he makes that deal. That Tosfos keeps on talking about the husband and the wife. What about the husband? What about the wife and a third party? That wouldn't be a problem, he says. Says the Ritva, Avoloi Rishus Shalai Huklal. One second. So the Ritva is coming up with two major chidushim. First of all, he's learning not like the way of salvation he learned in the other Zachranim. He's learning that you have no pilus of Kuf Amma. Let's get this straight. There's no such Rishus called Kuf Amma. Kuf Amma works because Chazal said she gets to be, she's kind of the area. When she's Yachal Lashomer, she gets to get, but the husband has no rights to it. So then why is it Safi Gerishin over here? He's watching it together with her. So now at the end of the day, it gets watched by him and her. It's not Ogid Gabe because he has no bailus here. So why is it a Safi Gerushin? It should be Vada Gerushin. Says the Ritva. V'hainu the Misafkala b'hai milsa afal pita tekanti Rabbanon. Even though we're working in the world of Rabbanon, shum di ihu vade. Heicha shuhu eini yachal l'shamra klal. V'hi yichal l'shamra shmir p'chusa. Havei migureshes. V'zeh nami karav lo. Avokan kivin shein shavim midavar. Shema Rabbanon le'tiktu b'chi agavim. Says the Ritva, he comes up with Gzeris. Maybe when the Rabbanon gifted this kinyan of Yachal Hashomer to her, that was only the case where she's independently Yachal Hashomer. But when you need to come on to the husband, maybe they didn't gift it. Why not? Dali Minker, Hai Chatzei Ritfei Mei Chatzei Roy. Because it just doesn't look right. If you have an area where you throw the get in the middle of the Rishas Rabbim, 95 amas away from the Isha, and she is clearly, solely the only one controlling the get. So Chazal can justify giving this a get because, listen, she's the only one in control. But when you have a dual ownership, so then you have to ask yourself, why, it looks so funny, it looks strange, says the Ritva. Why is she getting it more than him? So therefore, maybe Chazal pulled the rights to it. Mm-hmm. That's the suffering of the Gemara.
They never granted
the rights. The Asi LeMeimar, Gzeirah the Rabbanon, says the Ritva. People are going to think, Chatzah Shoshnei, Migureshes. This looks like a partnership. It's not really a partnership, but it looks like it. So therefore, the Ritva looks the Gemara a whole new way. Not that it's really Ogud Gabe, because it's not Ogud Gabe. It's not really the husband's Rishas. But Chazal decided to give her Kuf Amma. They only gave it in a situation where it doesn't look confusing and present potential problems. So learns the Ritva. Yeah.
I'll ask maybe a silly kasha, or maybe it's a klaliyus kasha. If it's all these types of questions, when it really comes down to what was the takana, if they want to make it that she's, let's say they didn't know what the takana was 3 generations ago when the takana was first issued, but now we see that they left it open and we're not sure, and we want to facilitate the get. So I'm a rabbi also. I'm Chazal.
I'm not sure.
Make the katana. Let's right now extend the takana.
I'm not sure how that would work.
Clear. Yeah. Right? We just make it clear. Yes, in this case, now we realize that they left it a little ambiguous 100 years ago. Let's clarify now that this. Yeah, we want her to be divorced. So we'll say in this case also, let's extend the takana clearly. In this case also.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the powers of that work. I don't know how they could. I don't know. I'm with you. I'm not sure if they have that power or they don't have it, because once Chazal left it as a suffix, they can't override it, even though they left it at suffix just because they didn't do enough research. They didn't do research yet. They're not
undoing what Chazal did. Yeah. They're not sure what Chazal did.
I'm not sure.
Let's make it clear now. We'll get together with Bezdin.
Yeah.
Let's be Misaki. I'm not.
I hear you. I'm not so sure if that override, if that's a breach on their powers of previous takanas. But the problem with Tosfos, let's go back to Tosfos for a second. How do you understand dual ownership over here? You're telling me that he could watch it and she could watch it. So Shmira is a Siba for Bailus. So at best, it should be a partnership. It should be Chatzar Shutfin. There's one problem. How do you understand why you're Safik Migureshes? Safik Migureshes means you have a reason to be divorced and a reason not to be divorced. So Chazal gave you a status of Safik Migureshes. The Monashach. If watching it is a Siba if watching it makes it mine, so then it's either his or hers. What do you mean it's both of ours? What do you mean suffix? What's the overriding deciding factor that gives you ownership of a get? Why is the conclusion of our Tosfos suffix? How does one in Svara understand the conclusion of suffix? What does it mean suffix? We both own it. One of us owns it. We don't know who owns it. We own it together. We can't own it together because Chatzar Shotfim ain't a kainim zemizet. We can't be kainim from each other. So it can't be working like that. So Rabbi Kiveger has his Gevaldik Achap. where he wants to suggest the following. Number 9, Kvega writes, he's coming to explain a longer chesed which we need to get back to. He writes one line. He writes like this, in the middle of the piece, he writes, El de kachu mikar adin, kiven de shnei michomir l'shomre yad shneiem shava ba, v'hiktsas migureshes. I'm not really sure what those words mean. Yeah. Rabbi Kivega seems to be saying that they have a shtickle. Each one has a shtickle rights to it. So whatever rights they have creates a chalois. So he has a little bit rights that makes him not divorced. She has a little bit rights that makes her divorced. So she's a suffolk. That's what suffolk is.
Is ksas migureshes and suffolk the exact same thing?
Yeah, no. He's explaining the Gemara. The Mishnah says suffolk. He's just saying that each one of them has a siba to why they should be the owner. So they each retain partial ownership. Partial ownership somehow equals gerushim and migureshes. We would have said it's zero. In order to have a get, either he owns it or she owns it. What does it mean they own it? Owning a get halfway doesn't make you suffolk migureshes. Makes you nothing. It's very funny over here. Normally, suffolk migureshes means I have a strong reason to say you're divorced, and I have a strong reason to say you're not divorced, so I say suffolk. That's not the case over here. The case over here, best case scenario, you own half a get. Owning half a get doesn't make you half divorced. It makes you no divorced. What does it mean over here? So Kveg is saying along this, which again, he's using it to explain a choy, which there makes a little bit more sense. He's saying that because each one of us have a compelling argument to why it's ours, it gives us a certain amount of rights to it. That right creates migureshes. So the cash on that is, what does that mean? You can't be partial own something. Either you own it or you don't own it. And if you own it, you're fully divorced. If you don't own it, you're not divorced. What does this mean?
Now we're talking about ownership.
Yeah.
Are we extending these lambdas to non-get?
No, the Gemara says that for Rabbi Yochanan, it's only getting in Kiddush, nothing else. It can't extend anywhere else.
So all of these discussions in terms of property and ownership,
not going to work.
We don't see extended into any of the buttons.
No.
We don't see any cross.
Not Rabbi Yochanan. Dalar Amos, yes. Not Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's 100 Amos is going to be getting the Kedushin experience only. The Chazanish had a whole different spin on this. And we mentioned this Chazanish way back. The Chazanish learns that's not Pshat in the Gemara. The Chazanish doesn't learn, like Rabbi Kveger, that they both have rights. The Chazanish learns one of them have all the rights, we just don't know which one. That's how the Chazanish learns the Gemara. The Chazanish learns the Gemara, when you have a case where each one is guarding it together, the suffix of the Gemara is, who is the overriding decider who has takes it all? There's no splitting ownership. It's one takes it all. We just don't know who's the one. Since they're doing it together, who should be the one to be the one owner? That's the suffix of the Gemara. So the Chazanish learns very different than Reb Kivega. The Chazanish learned, there's only one owner. There's no part owner over here. We just don't know who the one owner is. And because we don't know who the one owner is, that's why the Mishnah calls it suffolk gerushin. That's how the Chazanish learned the Gemara differently than Reb Kivega.
So why don't they take into account that when they're both owning it, that he was giving it to her, or throwing it to her, so therefore he's giving up part of that ownership?
That's the way the Rambam suggested such an idea, that he's giving up whatever he has. But if you assume that's not transferable, like we mentioned...
He's still Shomer.
Right, the problem is as long as he's still controlling it, he's still a partial owner. He can't remove that.
Yeah, she needs
so
a Shmira.
So Suffolk means the gets battle?
No, Suffolk means that she's not allowed to... She has to get another divorce if she wants to go free. And she... Cool. If her husband were to die right now, she would still not be allowed to marry Cohen because maybe she was divorced the first time. The one piece that we still need to talk about before we go further is back to Taisvis. We had a Taisvis... But Taisa had a kasha, what's suffolk of the Gemara? Why don't we use chazaka? What happened to chazaka? So Taisa gave his host to go to her, trey v'trey. When you have two groups of Eidim, we don't use chazaka. According to Abyechel, that's not the case of the Gemara. According to Abyechel, the case of the Gemara is this combined factor of Shmira. So let's go back to the good old-fashioned rules of chazaka. Why she's suffolk migureshes? We should go back to the rules of chazaka. Chazaka says, yesterday she was a married woman, today she's a married woman, and it's ain't a get legamri. Bishlama in Taisvis, we couldn't do that because we had a case of Trey. We had two groups of witnesses, and the Gemara Yavama says Trey has specific rules. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, that's not the case. According to Rabbi Yochanan, the case is just they're doing it together. So then, why can't you go back to the rules of Chazaka?
It's when you don't know something happened to change the Chazaka. You're Masubik
that maybe
something happened. We don't know what the legal consequence of it is. It's not like. That's not what Chazaka is.
Well, that's what Sir Shimon.
I don't have any reason to assume that the status changed, so I have to go on the assumption that the status.
We do have a reason. We have a reason because this idea of Shmira.
No, we did change the status.
Is a reason why someone should be married or divorced. Shmira is a Siva for divorce. The question just is because. Let's think like the Ritva. According to Ritva, it's a question of what Chazal did or didn't do. Right? So then the question is, so fine, you don't know what to do, so your hands are tied, so you go back to Chazaka. That's what we always do. So Reb Shimon, we spoke about Reb Shimon. Shayesh talks about, is Chazak only used when you don't know how to decide, or because you can't decide because pre-existing rules conflict? That might be telling how you learn the Gemara. So we'll the next week, we'll talk about how is Reb Yochanan, according to this new pshat, how is he going to learn the case of why don't you deal with Cheskas Eishes? Okay.